the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me once again from the road, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Boy, Adam, the struggle's been real, but we're actually doing this. I can't believe it.
Equipment failures, failures by just the hotel person to transfer the phone properly. We're going to get this done one way or another.
To even get me checked into my freaking room. Golly.
Yeah, I guess you had you wanted to start about an hour ago.
It's funny when you have to wait in the lobby for 50, just to, you know, check into a room. It's amazing. It's amazing how they'll screw up your entire schedule.
It took more minutes than the Seahawks put up on the board on Sunday against the Bucks last week. 40-34 in an overtime win.
Yeah, that was an interesting win. I don't know exactly how to put it, except for that's one of the more disappointing wins I can imagine or remember.
It was fun to watch, though. I know your gripe already in this game, because this was your gripe last season about teams that didn't play defense, and there really wasn't much defense in this game. It was just which team had the ball, which team was going to score last, and this week it was our Seahawks.
Yeah, there was no defense. There was also no kicking. That was another problem with it.
Right, yeah. Jason Myers left a good 7 points out on the field that day.
Yeah, that's problematic. You know, I mean, hopefully got it all out of his system in like one game. That'd be helpful. But, you know, as far as last year and watching that Rams-Chiefs game that everybody heralded as the new beginning of the NFL, and this is how ball is going to be played from now on, and what an exciting brand of football it is, and how much I think it's absolute garbage football, that's kind of besides the point. What really dismayed me about this game is literally the complete lack of defense, and just that's not a recipe for success long term. It's not sustainable in any way. And this is the last way I want to play football. It is not the way I was told we'd be playing football when we started the season. And while 7-2, which, you know, it's hard to be too upset being 7-2. It's just maddening to watch the defense just get tore up by a guy who won't even be the quarterback of his team next year.
You know what? There were a lot of questions in our section because I did bring Anthony. He did wear his Winston jersey, and he does think that that Winston might get the franchise tag and have one more year in Tampa Bay. But I could see what your point is. The Seahawks defense got torched by Jameis Winston, and there is a lot of times where we have good Jameis Winston and bad Jameis Winston. In his losses, though, it's usually been bad Jameis Winston. And we got good Jameis because we couldn't get to him.
Yeah, we got good Jameis for the majority of the game. And then we had one play of bad Jameis where he just decided to fumble for, like, no reason.
His offensive lineman backed into his elbow.
Okay, maybe. You still got to hold on to that ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's had trouble with that all year. He has, like, 12 fumbles. I think that might have been his 13th fumble on the season.
Yeah, I mean, well, not surprising, you know, and being out of character for him at all. It just, if it weren't for that gift, you know, we may be having a totally different discussion about this game. And that was kind of the last one on our schedule where we looked at it and be like, totally winnable. The rest of them, they're all tough games.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Let's start off with some of the positives, some of the highlights from this game, because there were some highlights. You had the Seahawks early on in the first quarter driving down the field, and Russell Wilson once again hitting Tyler Lockett for a touchdown pass. Just a nice throw to the corner of the end zone.
Russ has time, steps up in the pocket. Now he's going to lay it over the top. Lockett in the back of the end zone. He's got it. Touchdown, Seahawks. From 19 yards out, it was the Tyler Lockett and Russell Wilson show that entire drive, as Tyler Lockett waves goodbye at the Sam McCollum record. Holy smoke, have we got a battle here. This is going to be a great game. This might be a barn burner all the way to the end, these two offenses. Seattle from 19 out, 1 point away from tying it up.
Tyler Lockett, 152 yards, 2 touchdowns, and the first player since Brian Blades to have 150 yards plus and 2 touchdowns in a game. And that was done all the way back in 95, as Rabel mentioned, taking down the Sam McCollum record. Sam McCollum was there in the house, a Kalispell native, Adam.
Really? I had no idea.
He was there.
Well, I mean, at least he was there to watch it. you know, as far as Lockett being in the same company with Brian Blades, I mean, obviously when Lockett's all done with the Seahawks, like, he's going to go down as one of the greatest. I mean, it's always going to be Largent number one, but he's going to be right there in the conversation with, you know, Baldwin and Brian Blades and
Daryl,
you know,
Jackson,
guys of that ilk.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the play itself, that was fine. I mean, that was one of the few touchdowns on the day that I liked the play call when we got down towards the end zone.
You had some trouble with the play calling in this game for some reason.
For some reason, because the Seahawks did a lot of the things that they've done in the past down around the end zone. Say, I don't know, getting cued on second down and throwing a pass when you're on like the 1 yard line, 2 yard line, and you got four downs just to cram it down their throat and score a touchdown. And they constantly do this. It's something that Schottenheimer does over and over again. It's something that Bevel did over and over again. And the thing is that they got rewarded for it in this game. They got rewarded for poor decisions on the play call going down the stretch there in the end zone. And the problem with that is it's going to bite you in the ass when you play a team that's actually worth its salt. It's bad football. And again, I go back to it. That's not the football I was told we were going to play at the beginning of the year. We're going to be a smash mouth team. We're going to run it even when they know we're running it. And we're going to get those yards and we're going to chew them up. And it's not what we do. And it's cutesy. And you just won't carry far doing that.
They didn't necessarily get away from the run, knowing that they had one of the worst pass defenses in the league to throw to and one of the best run defenses. And it actually paid off in the third quarter when the Seahawks broke off the 60-yard run.
Fant is in as an extra tight end on first and 10 from the 15, and the handoff goes to Chris Carson, and he's got a hole. He's across the 20, breaks the second tackle, 30, 35, 40. He's on the move, midfield, 40, 35. They're chasing him, and the ball comes out as he is tackled by the linebacker, Devin White, who chased down Chris Carson, but the ball flies out of bounds. The Seahawks are in business on a magnificent run by Chris Carson of 61 yards. He coughs up the ball, but it stays in Seahawks hands. First and 10 for the Hawks just outside the Tampa Bay 25.
And that was a hell of a run. That comes, I believe, after the drive previous that they threw every single down and Russell got sacked twice. Was that the drive right before that?
I think that was that in the third quarter or was that in the second quarter?
Because I believe it was in the third quarter. I could be wrong. It's been almost a week since I watched the game.
I know.
But
I think it was the second quarter where Russell Wilson just kept getting sacked. And they looked pretty good, I think, outside of that first drive in the third quarter.
Yeah, and I believe they started out with a bunch of passes. Don't go anywhere. I'm just furious. I'm like, will you just run the damn ball?
Yeah.
And then they finally do. They get a huge play. Now the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense is scrambling, and they punch it in easily.
On second down and goal now from the 2, here comes the rush. The throw over the top in the back of the end zone. Touchdown, Seahawks! Tyler Lockett from 2 yards out. His second touchdown reception of the day. And the Seahawks are 2 points back of Tampa Bay, 21-19. And Pete Carroll says, we got to go for two.
They get the 2-point conversion to DK Metcalf. But yeah, the Seahawks scored on a fade. Adam, how can you not
another crap decision.
How can you not be happy about the Seahawks scoring on a fade?
Because it's not going to work when we're playing guys that actually know what they're doing.
playing
Tampa. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
I know you're playing Tampa, and that's fine. But if you really have the mindset, like I'm told we do, that we take every week as a championship game, then you treat every team as if they're a championship team that you're going up against. You don't run that little cutesy crap in the end zone. It's second and 2 on the 2 yard line. Pound it in there.
Yeah.
Chris Carson just ripped off a 60 yarder and you can't give him the ball. Like, that's not going to fly going down the stretch. And then the other thing was going for 2 there. I hated it at the time.
Why?
Why? Because Myers has been struggling, right, to this point.
Yeah.
It's early, you know, it's fairly early in the third quarter. There's oodles of time left in the game. Don't chase points at that point. You're going to be fine. Russell's been moving the ball up and down the field. Get Myers back out there. Let him watch one go through the uprights. And then maybe he has a little more confidence when you actually got to go put him out there to kick a game winner. It was a piss poor decision.
Maybe. I mean, the dude had already missed 4 points.
I get it. He's struggling. You need to get him out of his rut. He just needs to see one go through. It's like a shooter in the NBA who's having a rough stretch. Do you tell Steph Curry to stop shooting?
Well, he did get his chance a little bit later on, but this was not only one of the highlights of the day, Adam, but the call of the day as Russell Wilson hits Tyler Lockett on a 30-yard pass late in the third quarter.
Russell takes a shotgun snap with a four-man rush. Now he's going to throw near side. He's got Lockett, who makes a catch. First down, run out of bounds near sideline. We used to call that the turkey hole when I was a receiver. You get him behind the cornerback and just before the safety gets over the top to clean your clock, you make the catch on a perfect pass, and that was 30-yard completion. Seahawks in business, first and 10 at the Tampa 40.
Right to the turkey hole.
I didn't know the turkey hole existed, but I'm glad Russell threw it in the turkey hole. That was a nice completion. I mean, we needed every one of them. And, I mean, to start saying some nice things, because I got my frustrations out first, I mean, Russ was unbelievable and in total command of the game. And, you know, it's funny. He has another good week. And now all of a sudden he is definitely the MVP, you know, where a couple weeks ago he was out of the race. So just nice to see him go out there and just tear apart a terrible pass defense, because that's what he's supposed to do if you're making that kind of money. And he's proving the worth of his contract.
Yeah, he really is. And I'm still hung up on this turkey hole thing.
Yeah. Is that like, did you put stuffing in the turkey hole? That's what I thought.
Yeah, I guess that would be the obvious hole for the turkey hole, right?
Right.
Because there's more than one.
I don't know. I've never counted the holes in a turkey.
Well, there's got to be more than one.
Well, I mean, yeah.
I mean, how many holes do most animals have?
It's hard telling not knowing. I'm not a biologist, Brandon. I know amoebas have one hole.
Okay.
They eat and poop out the same thing. I got kicked out of seventh grade science class for saying, does that make him a butthead? Like asking the question. He didn't like that. I got kicked out.
Got kicked out of class for that, huh?
I did. Mm. Yep. Went to the principal's office.
Can't be using those words.
Mm.
Seventh grade. Those are some strong words for a seventh grader.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, yeah. So I'm assuming turkeys have at least 2 to 3 holes.
At least 2.
Why would they ever call that the turkey hole?
I don't know. I'm struggling with it.
Okay.
This is a question for Rabel.
Yeah, it is. Like he needs to answer this. Like he eventually explained the holy catfish thing.
Yeah.
You know where that came from? I need to know where turkey holes come from.
Just as a professional in his field, he keeps on bringing us new things to wonder about.
New obscure references that nobody quite understands and needs further explanation.
Like the gunner on punt coverage.
We never did quite get to the bottom of that.
No, there's people who thought they knew.
Yeah. So I looked at this game and I was frustrated as all get out. Like, I just didn't like the decisions and all that going through. But being in the stadium and watching the game live, like, I mean, how did you feel coming out after that?
It was a fun game to watch just because it was a back and forth type of game. I never felt like the Seahawks, even when they were down 21-7. And I think partially it's because Anthony, having heard from him as a Bucs fan and say, he kept telling me, you know, this is what the Bucs do. They get up early and then they find a way to lose. And so with knowing that that's a consistent point for them and knowing who our quarterback was, I had a pretty good idea that the Seahawks were going to get back into this.
Yeah, I never felt like, you know, we were out of it. I mean, short of the idea that I felt like we were never going to get a stop. And we were just kind of rooting for a Jameis mistake.
Right.
But I do recall, you know, a few seasons ago playing the Bucs at home and getting down, was it 21-0?
It was 21-0 at halftime.
Yeah. And I started watching the game. Then we had to start driving for a job and we go through like a no cell phone service for about like an hour. And I get out and there's a guy like watching the Seahawks game on TV at the convenience store. I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, what's the score? And he's like, oh, we're almost tied up or something like that. I was like, wait, what? So, yeah, it is something they do. They blow large leads.
Well, and ultimately, they ended up blowing a tie game. It was tied up 27-27 when Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf made some magic happen.
The play fake by Russell, who stops, looks, throws backside. Metcalf catches it down the sideline, 15, 10, 5. He's in. Touchdown. Seahawks! And if Tampa Bay can do it, the Seahawks can do it one better. From 53, Russell with a beautiful rainbow shot to Metcalf, who ran away from the defense. Jamel Dean was chasing. He was not going to catch the rookie. And the Seahawks back out on top, 33-27.
123 yards, the fourth most receiving yards by a Seahawks rookie. And he did it against the Bucs.
Yeah, he was really phenomenal. I mean, both him and Lockett were phenomenal throughout the game. It was amazing to watch. And I think this is going to lead to a larger discussion regarding Josh Gordon's pickup here in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Metcalf is really blowing away expectations. And I tried to keep him tempered when we started this. I mean, you did as well this season. And, I mean, he's just really come through. And you can tell he is a difference maker, and he's only going to get better. And his chemistry with Russ is unbelievable.
And it's only going to get better.
Yeah. And I mean, go back to the catch where he gets interfered with. The guy about rips his face mask off on a back shoulder fade, and he still comes down with it.
Well, that was on the game winning drive in overtime, wasn't it? Where Russell Wilson mm-hmm. hits him, and that was on a 3rd and 6, Adam. Third mm-hmm. and 6 from 35 yards out. They're not kicking a field goal from that distance after Myers missed those other ones, the one at the end of regulation, the one early on in the game, and the missed extra point. 3rd and 6. So they're either punting after that long deep throw down the sideline, or they maybe were going to go for it on 4th down at that point. But how clutch of a play was that?
It was unbelievably clutch. I mean, from both guys, Russ and Metcalf. And it's incredible that they have the kind of chemistry they do, even at this point. I can't imagine what it's going to be like in 2 years.
Brian Blades had 145 yards as a rookie in 98. Baldwin, 136 back in 2011. Largent, 128 yards in 1976. And DK Metcalf with number 4. So that's some pretty nice company Metcalf's with among the rookie top receiving leaders.
Oh, absolutely. Can't hang his head at all. I mean, I'd be proud as punch if I was him.
And his 525 yards right now on the season are ahead of Terry McLaurin, who's tearing it up at Washington, and A.J. Brown at Tennessee, who has 429 yards.
Yeah, out of the rookie receivers, he's right there. If not the best, I mean, you can make an argument with him or maybe Hollywood Brown. I don't know. But former teammates, which is kind of ironic. But apparently they don't know how to use wide receivers at Ole Miss. That's what I get out of that.
Well, AJ Brown isn't Hollywood Brown. Hollywood Brown was the Brown for Oklahoma. But yeah, his teammate with Tennessee.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. You're right. I got my Brown receivers. Oh, that doesn't sound good. I got my receivers named Brown mixed up.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, that 3rd and 6 catch, and what does it do? It leads to, well, it led to a Chris Carson run that kind of went backwards, but it was right after that led to the game-winning touchdown.
Russ takes the shotgun snap, looks, throws inside, ball is caught, into the end zone, Seahawks win, touchdown, Seahawks! Jacob Hollister, his second score, and the Seahawks win! In dramatic fashion, in overtime, here at CenturyLink Field. What a game! The Seahawks never quit, and Russell Wilson has his 31st win in fourth quarter, or overtime, as all the players head to the far side to congratulate Jacob Hollister.
Rabel with the stat.
Russell Wilson's 4th game-winning drive on the season already matches his career high in a season.
Is that true? I did not realize that. I mean,
the most Russ has ever had is 4 in a season.
It's kind of not surprising, considering that, I mean, this team is only going wherever he takes them.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so, I mean, basically coming down, I know they have the most wins by 7 points or fewer in all the league. I mean, that's just a testament to Russ being clutch.
Yeah, well, that's like every week, right? Except for the Cardinals.
Yeah, no, exactly my point. I mean, it's just him really believing, and, you know, he's talked a little bit about having the neutral mind, you know, just the idea you're just not too high, too low. You go out there and you execute, and then you're going to get it done and have him believe. And he really is a master at that, and you can see how that comes through in clutch moments because it does take the jitters out of everything.
Well, how much of a contrast was that watching Thursday Night Football and veteran from 2004, Philip Rivers, has an opportunity for a game-winning drive with a minute left? I think they still had all their timeouts. And oh my gosh, did he look jittery every single time he dropped back, and he was 0 for 7 on his passes. The only reason why they got a first down was because of a legal contact penalty. And that's Phillip Rivers, who's 5 spots ahead of Russell Wilson on the all-time game-winning drive leaders. He's at 32, and Russ is just at 27 right now.
Yeah, he's also his 32nd season in the league?
Yeah, he's 45th, eight more seasons than Russ. But it just occurred to me, that contrast of when Russ comes into a game with that little time on the clock, he doesn't look frantic. He doesn't look like he's trying to rush things or throw things into coverage where it shouldn't go. And Phillip Rivers, 7 straight times, he's making questionable passes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but that kind of does fit Phillip Rivers' career.
Yeah.
I mean, you think of him in big moments, and he's not a big game quarterback. He's not one of those guys that I want leading my team going down the stretch in a tight game. I mean, he is prone to make that mistake or, you know, just not have the right mindset. But I'm sure when he starts playing in England on a weekly basis, he'll be a lot better.
They're not moving to England.
Why not?
Because they need to sell seats in L.A. I heard.
Good luck being a losing team. I don't know if you knew this about it, the L.A. fan base, but if you don't win games, they don't give a crap about you.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't put it past Kroenke and the Rams to have slipped that story in the media, though, right?
That feels right, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're going to be looking to move to London. So, buy your Rams season tickets, which they're already having trouble, which they're still having trouble selling.
Yeah, exactly. That was, I think you're onto something here with Kroenke planting that story, because since they're not doing very well and like fans are starting to not show up, surprise, surprise. Maybe you try to, you know, make a power play and consolidate the fan base, quote unquote, in LA.
They're going to find out pretty soon that's not going to work for anybody. So
no, but you know, Dean Spanos and the Chargers organization, they've got a lot of money riding on that new stadium. I could see that being completely false, them moving to England.
Because I think the Jaguars have right of first refusal for a move to London, because they've been pumping up the Jags as a potential London team for all this time.
Yeah, Shaq Khan, he does like the idea of playing over there. So, yeah. I mean, not surprising, I guess. I mean, he's where is he from originally? He looks like a Bond villain a little bit.
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? He's got like the Wario mustache.
I'm going to win.
That's exactly right. So, yeah, we'll see whoever ends up in London. I mean, I heard that the earliest that they would be looking to do that, you know, absolute earliest would be like 2022.
Hey, can I bring it back to the Bucks and Seahawks and just say that the Bucks have some of the biggest special teams players I've ever seen?
Really?
Bradley Pinion, their punter, is ginormous. Their long snapper is like 6'4". And even their kicker is bigger than, like, he's actually a little bit jacked.
Really? Jack kicker?
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing I've ever seen, walking the special teams guys walking around. I point out the guy punting the football. I'm like, who is that? Is that a player, like, screwing around and punting? And Anthony's like, no, that's Bradley Pinion. That's her punter. He's wow. Like 6'6", and he's the size of he's like if Jimmy Graham gained about 20 pounds.
Interesting, because I remember standing in the end zone pregame for a Rams game, and Johnny Hecker was sitting there practicing, and he was huge.
You know, he's like the height of Hecker, but he has the girth of a tight end.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Powerful combination. Well, fortunately for him, he had an easy day since the defense wasn't going to bother to stop the Bucs all day, so he never really had to do much.
Yeah, so that takes us back to the defense. I mean, there were so many long drives, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't... I guess you can say the one thing is that they weren't giving up the big play. You didn't even see the Bucs really challenge deep all that much. I think I could maybe count on one hand the amount of times I saw them go deep down the field, and those didn't work out. So I guess they got the defense to do what Pete Carroll likes to see, but they were able to dink and dunk down the field.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this last week. I mean, the bend but don't break crap and all that. And, you know, not give up the big play, but give up everything short and intermediate and live with that. And hopefully they make a mistake going down the stretch, but you got to be able to bow up somewhere. And this team doesn't. I mean, I understand that the third down percentages are pretty good. But again, as we talked about last week, they're awful on first and second down. They're getting just carved up. It's just too soft. It's all too soft. And I just want, I want the corners to come up and lay a hand on a guy. I'm tired of these free releases. I'm tired of the linebackers, you know, basically playing fairly sucked up to be sure to stop the run and then just having things just dropped over their head, and it makes their stats look terrible. Like, there needs to be some fundamental changes in the way that they're scheming up the defense, because they're leaving the short intermediate stuff way too wide open. It's way too easy for even the ilk of, say, like Matt Schaub.
Well, hey, here's the good news, Adam. How if Matt Schaub is throwing up 480 yards on the defense, who's going to do better? I don't know if you can do better.
Well, I mean, there's a guy named Jimmy G who has looked pretty good this year, and that worries me.
Well, yeah, that can worry you, but, you know, when you've filled up the bucket as full as it can go, like, you can't add more water to it.
Well, the bucket gets emptied out before every game. So right now the bucket's empty. Somebody else can go fill it fuller.
Are we going to see somebody go 500 yards of passing offense against this defense?
I damn near make a bet on that we do.
Really? I don't think it comes against the 49ers, though. They're a good running team.
True. And I've got some ideas about that when we get into more of our 49ers preview coming up here. But yeah, Jimmy G hasn't been asked to carry that team at all throughout this season.
Well, we did get an email from James Lester, says, I'm excited to have Josh Gordon as a Seahawk.
Yeah. I don't know if there was more to that, but yeah, as far as the excitement level over the signing of Josh Gordon, it's been interesting to see the media reaction to that. There's some people that just like penciled him in as the starter next to Lockett, and all of a sudden DK Metcalf is now riding the bench.
Gordon's going to be the number three guy.
Yeah, well, I'm just telling you what some of the national, you know, narrative was. Oh, they pair him up with Lockett. Now you've got two dynamic threats, and, you know, it's going to be amazing. And I think there's a reason to be excited for the Josh Gordon signing, just in the sense of he is a very special player in physical talent.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's a knucklehead in the sense that he's a dumb guy. I think he can pick up the offense. Like, I think he's fine there. I actually have a lot of respect for him in the sense that he seemed to have a handle on the substance abuse stuff and has gotten himself into a place where he's able to be productive and keep himself right. And so I've got a lot of respect for him there. My thing is I just don't know where he fits in with this receiving corps at this point.
I think he's going to be your guy that you want him to take some of those catches that maybe Will Dissly was going over the middle for.
Possibly. So I get that to a degree, but I don't think you're going to start running completely different formations and running a lot of, you know, three and four wide receiver sets rather than having tight ends in there, you know, because they do say they want to run the ball, and they seem to, you know, some games. What do? You play him as a de facto tight end?
Well, I think, well, we saw a little bit of that in this last game with Hollister even lining up more in the receiver spot, because he's not your average kind of blocking tight end.
He's not a good blocker.
No, yeah. And they lined him up that way. They almost lined him up how you saw the Saints line up Jimmy Graham.
Right, flexed him out a little bit and all that. I mean, possibly. He does have the big body and all that, and he could be a good weapon on the intermediate part of the field, but honestly, throughout his career, I mean, it's been him stretching the sidelines.
I don't know. I was looking back at his last 16 games or so with the Patriots, and when I looked at his route tree and his receptions late in the season last year, I would say 60 to 70% of his catches were over the middle.
Really?
It was really interesting. It wasn't what I expected either.
Well, my question is, why did the Patriots not want him? A team that's supposedly devoid of weapons right now.
Yeah. Well, that is a little bit worrisome. It sounded like he was maybe showing up late to meetings and not exactly focused. So he was dealing with this injury issue, which it was really curious to me hearing Bill Belichick, because when they asked him why they released him because he was healthy, because they put him on IR a couple weeks back. Mm-hmm. And I guess that they just, it seemed like maybe a punishment type move, like, oh, if you're that hurt, then we're just going to IR you. And he's like, well, I'm not that injured. I can play. And so he got tested, and that's what made them decide to release him, I guess. It's really weird.
Well, what I understood is that there's some part of the rule that, like, if you're on IR, but then you end up being healthy, like, they've got to release you.
Right.
Or put you on the active roster.
Or give you an injury settlement.
Or there you go. Or give you the injury settlement. And I mean, for the risk and everything that the Seahawks take here by just putting in a waiver, I mean, it's a great pickup, and that part's exciting. Do I think he's actually going to be a big contributor this season? Absolutely not.
When you look at how much John Brown has been contributing, how much David Moore has been contributing, I mean, it's probably going to be at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Or lower.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I mean, do you view right now Jerron Brown as a difference maker on this team or David Moore as a difference maker on this team?
I mean, I was wondering which one of those guys might get cut if they decided to keep Gary Jennings or, you know, because when they picked up Josh Gordon off the waiver wire, they had 8 wide receivers on the team and they've been riding with Gary Jennings as a healthy scratch every week, John Ursua as a healthy scratch. You haven't been seeing a ton of Malik Turner, and then, you know, Jerron Brown, David Moore kind of splitting the third wide receiver time, you know, with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett playing so well and Brown and Moore not playing all that great. And even, I guess you could throw Turner in there too. I mean, any one of those guys, I could have seen him getting rid of.
Well, they got rid of Jennings.
Right. Yeah. And he ends up going to Miami.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't last long.
No.
What are they, first or second in the waiver?
I think they moved up order. To fourth because they got the win over the Jets.
Oh, oops.
Yeah.
Better bench Fitzpatrick. Can't be winning right now.
They're screwing up their draft position.
They really are. Like, I mean, if you're a Miami fan, I mean, I sit here and I cry about the defense and I'm all like negative Nancy for half the podcast. But, I mean, at least we're not the Dolphins. Like, not even close. Like, people are talking about us like we, you know, might be a contender.
Yeah.
I saw an interesting article today. An idea to try to help fix the pass rush was to get Shaquem Griffin out there a bunch more.
You know what? I'm not opposed to it because Ziggy Ansah, he could play zero snaps as far as I'm concerned right now.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way, right? I mean, very disappointing to this point. I mean, it sounds like he's still struggling through health issues, and it might be just the point to where his body just is like, I can't do it. The mind's willing, but the body just won't.
And, you know, that was the risk that they took when they signed him, and it's not paying off. So, yeah, get Shaquem in there, get Quentin Jefferson. Hopefully he'll be back from injury, and he can start playing more time. And, you know, maybe that's going to end up being your four main guys, Quentin Jefferson, Clowney, and Jaron Reed, who had another game where he didn't show up all that well, and Puna Ford or Al Woods.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about a bunch of different guys there. I mean, we were really excited about some of the things that Puna had done, you know, leading up to the last few weeks and everything. And you're not really seeing much out of him. We were really excited about Jaron Reed come back. And I mean, I'm not saying they're doing terrible out there, but they're not making impact plays. I mean, Clowney's at least disrupting things, even if he doesn't get to the quarterback to finish, which was never his game to start with.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, sure, you could put Keem out there. Cool. But he's, what, 230?
Yeah, he's not real
big. Like, I mean, you're going to have to use him very situationally. And, I mean, he can't be out there for, you know, opportunities where the run could be coming.
Right.
As a DN. You can't put him out there like that.
Yeah, they're in a tough spot, I think, with what they need to do on the defensive line. And it makes me question the defense. But then I look at the Chiefs last year, Adam. They had a bad defense, and they weren't a first-round exit. They were within a play of going to the Super Bowl and beating the Patriots.
True fact. But I guess at the end of the day, like, making the playoffs is nice, right? Like, I want to make the playoffs. That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Winning a game in the playoffs is nice. That would make me feel good. I would like that. But you know what I really want? With a
catfish
Super Bowl. And I'm looking at this team and like, it doesn't look like a team defensively that has the opportunity to actually do that. I mean, I can't see Russ doing much more than he's doing now. And you can't win a Super Bowl the way they're playing.
I would argue that it's still possible, but it definitely makes it less likely, especially when you look at the upcoming opponent they have, especially when you look at some of the other teams in the NFC, like the Saints, and it's going to make it hard to get by some of those that have the better defenses in the playoff, especially. I got an email here from Michael O'Hara, says, just wanted to mention something to you guys. The Seahawks wins may not all have been pretty, but we are beating the teams we should beat. And at the end of the day, a win is a win. The two teams we have lost to are both division leaders, one who hasn't lost a game since playing us, the Saints, and one who has just beaten the unbeatable Patriots. So those losses aren't looking too bad anymore. Plus, the 49ers haven't played either of them yet.
That's an excellent point. The only thing that gives me a little pause about that regarding the Saints and the Ravens is both those games were at the clink.
Yeah.
And you lost. And not only that, but it felt fairly convincing.
For sure.
in the sense that, yeah, I mean, sure, we made it close in the end each time, but I mean, it just really, you felt like we were outclassed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what has me worried.
Well, they got 7 more games on the schedule, and you know what would make me feel better than 7-2?
I don't know.
8-2.
Yeah, 8-2 would feel real good considering the opponent coming up, wouldn't it?
Yeah, even though the Seahawks have 2 losses, the 49ers are undefeated. You know, the Seahawks are still in control of their destiny. So if they win out, they get the top spot in the NFC West.
Oh, absolutely. And that is something that, you know, while I sit here and wring my hands about the long-term future, that does definitely poo-poo what could be coming up, you know, as far as what the Seahawks could do going forward to finish out this regular season. And I'm certainly not taking the division for granted. I'm not looking at the Niners and being like, well, crown them. I mean, who have they really played? I mean, tell me there to you, which is their, you know, best win versus, you know, an opponent.
Well, it would have to be their win over the Rams.
And are the Rams like the Rams this year?
Oh, they're definitely not last year's Rams. The way they just wiped the floor with the Carolina Panthers was interesting.
That's not all that interesting to me. I mean, you got a guy, Kyle Allen, back there. Like, I just, that win is not nearly as impressive as it looks. Like, if that game starts to snowball just a little bit, and Kyle Allen's not the type of guy that's going to keep you in it, and, you know, you manage around him. And it just got out of hand, and then the score looks gaudy.
Yeah, the Rams game is really the only one that you can point to. It was a close game with the Steelers when they took them on in week 3, and that was the week after the Seahawks played them. I'm curious to see what the Steelers are going to do against the Rams this week, but, you know, the best thing I can say about the 49ers, though, is that not only have they beaten the bad teams, they've destroyed the bad teams.
Yeah, is that what they did to the Cardinals last week?
They were in control of that game.
Were they? Like, I mean, they were for a minute, and then all of a sudden it got real close again.
Yeah. Well, that's I'm used to knowing what that feels like.
Well, sure, but what I'm saying is that I watched a good bit of that Niners Cardinals game while I was driving down the road. Well, I wasn't driving, I was riding, but you know, I watched a good bit of it, and you know, there were opportunities that the Cardinals had there against that 49ers defense. I mean, and don't get me wrong, that defense is good. I mean, I really do like their defensive line. They lost Kwon Alexander. I think that's going to be actually a big problem for them going forward. Their DBs are playing very well. I mean, even down to their slot guy. I mean, I like what they got going back there. Obviously, Richard Sherman being among the guys there. And, you know, playing at maybe not his peak, but playing very well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, you
improvement off of last year for sure.
Yeah. So I think that defense is, you know, something to be taken seriously, but you know, I watched Arizona, man, and like Kenyon Drake, you know, was there for, you know, 22 minutes and suited up and ran the hell out of the ball on him with an offensive line that's not great. Like, that seems to bode well. going forward. I mean, San Francisco is only 14th in the league against the rush, and I mean, that's something that we could establish and really, you know, make things difficult for them. Also, too, the other thing that the Cardinals did that I thought was really ingenious, they had a lot of really nifty screens that they ran against the Niners that they had no answer for, because they're all screaming up field as those big, bad pass rushers. That's something that the Seahawks could really look to and use to punish the Niners.
Yeah, not something that we see a lot of. I think we did see a screen pass to Carson in this past game that was really effective, too. So, yeah, maybe they break out of that some more, or even maybe a tight end screen with Hollister, because, you know, he's showing that he can be a little bit of a weapon in the pass game.
Yeah, cool. I'm not hanging my hat on Jacob Hollister.
We had there was a nice tight end little dump off pass to Luke Wilson in this last game. Yeah, maybe they get those guys a little bit more involved.
I'd like to see Ed Dixon get more involved. Yeah. I'd like that.
I wonder if he'll even be active for Monday's game.
He's got to be, right? With Luke Wilson getting injured, I know he's trying to be a warrior and, like, power through, and, you know, good for him. But, I think I'd rather see Dixon out there at this point.
One guy for the 49ers that we may not see is George Kittle.
Yeah, is the knee flaring back up on him? Last I heard that, you know, it was a problem, but he felt like he was fine and he was going to be able to get through it.
Yeah, I know that he was out of practice for the Thursday practice, so I'll probably wait and see. I'm sure he's going to play. He's a tough dude.
Yeah, he is a tough dude. Like, I got a lot of respect for George Kittle, but we'll see if he does play out there. I mean, we've had played tight ends pretty well this year. I think there's an opportunity that we could shut him down. But then you look at the rest of the weapons, and I mean, the addition of Emmanuel Sanders was really a great get by them. I'm really pissed at the Broncos for letting that happen and not giving us Von Miller to make it fair. And that's going to be our biggest problem. But then if I think about it and I look at Shaq, you know, matching up against Sanders, that's a guy he can handle.
I do worry a little bit about the slants. He seems to be struggling with Shaq seems to be struggling with those a little bit more this season.
The scheme is struggling with those.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose it's not all on him.
Yeah.
He had a rough day, but he was going up against Mike Evans. So if that's the one guy that Shaquille Griffin's going to have a hard time against, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that would be, the guy that you would think would give him fits. Pettis has played okay throughout the year. But the rest of that receiver, Debo?
Yeah.
What's his last name? Samuel, right? Yeah. He's okay. But sure. These guys aren't world beaters. I mean, they're not the same class of wide receivers we just saw with the Bucs.
Oh, for sure. No, it's kind of the opposite. No, the one guy that you worry about is George Kittle. And their number two guy this season has been the rookie Debo Samuel. But I do think Emmanuel Sanders, after two games, he is, I think, fifth among the receivers. So I think he only needs 50 yards to jump up to third and pass Marquise Goodwin as the third most targeted receiver, including when you include George Kittle among the pass catchers.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think about that, and what I worry about with the Niners isn't so much, what Jimmy G can do in the passing game, because it really is all predicated off their run game, and they have been running the ball down the throats of people. But let me, just give you an idea of the type of competition they've been playing against in the sense of running the football. And, everybody touts a run game as amazing, right? Here are some of the defense that they've ran the football effectively against. The Los Angeles Chargers, 19th in the league. Let's see, what else do we got here? We got the Arizona Cardinals, 23rd in the league. The Carolina Panthers, 26th in the league. The Washington Redskins, 28th in the league. The Cleveland Browns, 30th in the league. The Cincinnati Bengals, 32nd in the league. They've been racking up those run yards on some atrocious run defenses. And the thing with the Seahawks is they are stopping the run well. And if they can actually contain that and put it all on Jimmy G's shoulders, I think that makes it much more difficult for that Niners offense. And I look for Jimmy G to make a mistake or two. This is one of his first marquee games as a starter for a big time team. I think that adds up in our favor.
And you do like how the Seahawks, the way Pete Carroll gets the Seahawks ready for prime time. They're since 2010, they're 27-5-1 which is the best in the NFL since 2010 in prime time. They're 8-2 in Monday Night Football over that stretch. And the other interesting thing I saw, the Seahawks are 9-1 under Pete Carroll going into their bye week.
Interesting. Well, you usually hear about the stat coming out of the bye week. So, yeah, you don't hear about that.
No.
I will add the caveat to those running defenses that they faced.
Yeah.
The one run defense they faced that was good was the Bucs. It also happened to be week one.
Right.
So, you know, teams are, you never know what happens in week one. And on top of that, you know how many yards their leading rusher had?
I know 40. That they, 40?
40.
So they had 98 total.
I really believe that, you know, we have a great chance at stopping their run game. And a lot of Kyle Shanahan's system is all predicated off the play action pass and all those things. And, you know, you bottle that up, make Jimmy G have to work a little bit. Like, I think that we can force him into a mistake. Now, does Jimmy G look as bad as he did at the beginning of the season where he looked like he was, you know, freaked out if anybody got within 5 yards of him? No, he actually does.
Handsome Jimmy never looks bad, Adam.
Yes, he does. He looked bad at the beginning of the season in preseason.
He always did. Looks handsome, even when he's calling Aaron Andrews baby after the game and post-game interviews.
Yeah, what was the context of that? I saw the headline, but I did not click on the video.
She said, how does it feel to be 8-0? And he said, it feels great, baby.
Now, did he say it like, it feels great, baby, like towards her? Or he's like, it feels great, baby.
Either one, doesn't matter.
Yeah. Because like...
No, because I mean, he would not baby a male reporter, Adam.
Catfish! I'll tell you exactly why. I worked down here in the South on a large occasion. I don't know how many times, like, I've walked in and be like, how's it going, man? And I got up and said, oh, I'm good, baby.
Well, Handsome Jimmy could baby me if he wants.
That's between you and Handsome Jimmy. Like, I mean, he wears those ugly colors. I can't touch him, you know?
Yeah.
That and the whole porn star thing, you know.
I need to gain some poundage up top, I think, to bounce onto Jimmy, Handsome Jimmy's radar.
I think so, yeah. Maybe you can get one of those, like, you know, corset/bustier things. You can just push everything up.
I think I need to blow up a few balloons and tuck them into my shirt.
That would, I don't know. He might be fooled.
He might be able to tell the difference.
Yeah, he might have shaved the beard, too, though. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's never happening.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm worried about the 49ers defense. 30 sacks on the season already. Bosa has 7, D Ford 5.5, Armstead has 5.5, Buckner has 4. Their nickel corner, Emmanuel Mosley's playing pretty well. Opposite Richard Sherman with Akella Witherspoon out. Sherman's been the most targeted defensive back for the 49ers.
Yeah, I think a lot of teams are trying to find out, like, hey, are you still who you used to be? And they're finding out that he's at least a, you know, 90% replica of what he used to be.
I think he's actually leading the league in QB rating, you know, in the good way, going his way.
Right. In his direction, right? Yeah. But yeah, not the picks and those game-changing plays that he was famous for with us. But
three picks on the season and just a 56% completion percentage. So that's pretty good. I would take that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, would I be sad if Sherm was still on the team? Probably not.
Have to worry about it. Is Tevin Coleman, is he back and healthy too?
Yeah, he didn't seem to play much. They kind of ride the hot hand, it seems like, between those two backs. And I didn't know if Coleman was really injured the last game, but they, you know, it just depends on who seems to be producing. They'll roll with that guy.
Number one in total defense, pass defense, allowing an average of 138 yards a game. That's pretty incredible. Points per game, they're only allowing 12.8, which is good for second in the league. And I think that's only behind the Patriots. But I think that kind of goes to quality of opponent, too, like you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah, and that is something to take into account. I mean, just watching them against the Cardinals, I guess, I looked at that defense, and it wasn't as if I saw a defense that was just absolutely suffocating. And that's against a gimmicky-ass offense.
I just have a hard time with Thursday night games as being a good barometer of how a team can play on a short week.
Oh, sure. I mean, if you want to make excuses, but I mean, is it a good barometer, you know, to get eaten up by Cliff Kingsbury, a guy who couldn't, you know, win a game in college, basically?
Yeah. Well, they've got three of them.
Oh, yeah. They got three of them, but you get my drift. Like, this wasn't the team that they looked at this year, this Arizona Cardinals team, and being like, we're going to be a contender. I mean, they're in full-on rebuild mode.
All right, Adam. Well, to wrap this up, I do wonder, though, is this a must-win game for the Seahawks if they want to win the division?
Yes.
It feels that way to me, too.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, that's a lot of pressure. But, again, we talk about the way this team treats every single game that they look at. And it's not going to be something that they feel like is an insurmountable feat. And, like I said, again, just watching that Cardinals game, I think the 49ers, they can get got. They just haven't played a lot of great teams, and that's because they've been a crap team for the last few years, and so they had an easy schedule.
And they haven't played a quarterback like Russell Wilson yet. And Russell, as he's shown over and over and over again already this season, you can't count him out. As long as he's within a score or two in the fourth quarter, he's going to find a way to get the team back in the game.
Oh, no doubt about it. And, I mean, with Russ, you have a fighting chance. And, you know, and Russ, we trust. And I think it's going to be an exciting game. I don't think that one team's going to run away with this. And we're definitely not going to get blown out. And it's going to be interesting. And I think the 49ers are definitely on the come up here. But usually those teams run into a roadblock here and there. And this would be that type of game to me.
All right, Adam, let's get to the back half of the show, get into some Do Better, Better at Life, welcome a new member of the flock, and we got some pick 'em winners.
Oh, yeah, I know it wasn't me.
Getting into the second half of the show, and the Seahawks, I'm looking at the NFL standings, and I'm taking some amount of joy at being 7-2, because I look around the NFC. I see the Green Bay Packers are 7-2, you know, Aaron Rodgers, you know, retaking his spot as one of the golden boys in the NFL. And you got the New Orleans Saints at 7-1, the 49ers at 8-0. And then everybody else is kind of that 5-3, 6-3. And over on the AFC, New England 8-1, they take the L to the Baltimore Ravens, who are 6-2. And so Seahawks even have a better record than the Baltimore Ravens, who they lost to. And in the AFC, it's Buffalo. They're the other two-loss team.
Yeah, the NFC definitely feels more competitive in the sense of there's probably three or four teams or four or five teams that you could look at that are like legit players, and then a bunch of guys that could ruin your day.
Well, yeah,
there's a bunch of teams that could just ruin your day.
Well, look at all the three-loss teams on the NFC. You know, Dallas 5-3, Minnesota 6-3, Carolina 5-3, the Rams 5-3, and I think you even have Philly in the mix there at 5-4.
Yeah, I believe in Philly and the Rams above all those other teams.
Well, we play some of those other teams. We got to play Carolina. We got to play Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm. Those two games don't worry as much as some of the others up on the schedule. Say Monday night.
A lot of primetime games coming up in this next stretch.
Yeah, that bodes well. I mean, you spoke to Pete Carroll's record and this iteration of the Seahawks record on primetime. And yeah, it's definitely good for our deal. There's no doubt about it. Our guys get up.
It does lead back to that, just that idea of trying to treat, you know, and you hear from the interviews, Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll talking about the mentality of the team and trying to treat all of those games the same way. And I think that does kind of lead to a bit of a competitive advantage by not making any game bigger than another. I know I get frustrated with it sometimes because then, you know, I kind of expect a team to play better in prime time, but it is that way they practice of treating every game the same exact way.
They may not play better, but they win.
Yeah.
That part's nice.
I do like that part.
Yeah.
I also like it when we get some new members of the flock.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
Yeah, James Cronshaw in at $3 a month. He went to and he signed up through PayPal, seahawkerspodcast.com/support, and put in for a $3 a month subscription.
Cool. Well, I'm glad James took the effort to do that. I mean, a lot of people seem to like that PayPal route better.
Yeah, the PayPal route does work well. And I know Dustin Mock, our executive producer, he comes in every month through that route as well. So a big thanks to our executive producer, Dustin.
Oh, hell yeah. Always a big, big thanks to Dustin. I mean, He's one of our biggest supporters, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. And if you want to help support the show, you can go to getintheflock.com. At the end of this show, we're going to be thanking all of our 1212 supporters and above, as we do. And if you want to get in your intro as part of that, your name, where you're from, the school that you went to, you can send that to gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com. We'll get that in there. And you can be part of the introductions to the rest of the crowd.
Oh, yeah. Those are always fun, man. And I really love the way that the little Flockers have taken that and making it their own.
All right. Well, we got some pick'em winners, Adam. And you mentioned that you weren't in here. I didn't have a great week either, but we had 12 teams who got 11 picks correct this past week.
Wow. That's impressive.
It was impressive. And I used to have the names here, but now it seems like they were deleted. So,
well, they know who they are.
Why don't I announce the week 8 winners? Because I forgot to do that last week. The winner last week was the Anza was always Clowny. We had 3 perfect teams in week 8 who got all 15 games correct.
Wow, are you serious?
Yeah, yeah, pretty incredible. It was the Anza is always Clowny, the biggest little Flocker, and no punt intended were the 3 that got all their games perfect. And it was Christian who even got the exact number of points for the Monday night game for the tiebreaker.
Does that just mean week 8 was predictable? See, I felt good because I think I had 11 that week. And I was like, all right,
yeah.
I'm back on the swing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I got 12 or 13. I still beat you, but yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for rubbing it in. Appreciate it.
Week 9 winners coming out on top was Pete's Clownies.
Also, like, it's basically what I'm getting out of this, you need to have a play on Clownies acquisition to be a winner in the pick.
It is helping, especially in week 8 and week 9. Yeah. More for Score was up there as well in the tiebreaker, and Crafted for Rubs.
Nice. Well done by all of you. I don't even know if I put my picks in last week.
Oh, yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
You probably screwed that
but
up.
But I can tell you honestly who I would have picked.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there were some misses last week that I think was tough for a lot of people because all the home teams won last week, including Miami and
every single home team.
I think it was something crazy like that.
Wow.
Let me go to the scores. Okay, it wasn't every single home team because San Fran did win down in Arizona and the Texans beat the Jaguars, but that was in London. And it was in London, right? Yeah. And then the Cowboys, it was on Sunday, all the home teams won apart from the London game. And then on Monday night, the Cowboys won in New York.
Wow. That doesn't happen often, I would think.
No. And especially when you had, you know, the Packers playing in Los Angeles.
Yeah, but Aaron Rodgers is still the greatest. It's fine. They'll be fine. They're definitely a contender.
Yeah. And then we watched the Chargers lose to Oakland. But yeah.
Right, yeah. No reason for concern there at all.
Yeah, we probably won't get to picks again this week, but, you know, I can see why you're wearing down and with me beating you every week and all.
Yeah, well, I wish that was the reason. I'm more wearing down because just in the last week, it's been 3,000 miles on the car.
Yeah, that's a lot of driving.
Yeah, 2,500 more to go.
Yeah, with all that car time, it's probably hard to find time to put in picks.
Yeah, it's hard to find time to do anything other than like drive and get fatter on junk food.
Well, yeah, hopefully you're taking some time to enjoy breakfast when you can, Adam.
Well, I do my best. Yeah, for sure. Well, I did try to take some time and enjoy myself for one afternoon in New Orleans on this trip down here in Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah.
How was that?
That was interesting.
Yeah. Interesting,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I had one or two do-betters. I didn't know which one I was going to go with, and my time in New Orleans might be one of my do-betters. I don't know. It depends if we're going to do-betters yet.
No, I was actually trying to transition to Michael Paul with the breakfast comment.
Yeah, well, I figured.
And he emails in, and this header, I was tentative to click on this, and I almost didn't read it. The email header was claiming responsibility for the victory.
Oh, okay.
And you know, because as fans, we only take the blame when it comes to losses, but I did want to hear what Michael Paul has to say, so I did open it. It says, okay, I know we aren't supposed to take credit for wins, see, only losses, but I believe credit must be given for this win. I'm not claiming that credit, but I'm willing to give credit for this victory to my fabulous partner, and I believe the entire flock needs to be grateful. The game was on, and I was wearing the usual Rashad Penny Go Aztecs t-shirt underneath my Russell Wilson blue jersey. Partner dutifully wears her number 12 fan t-shirt. She was in the other room reading because although she supports me, she's a fan by proxy and isn't nearly as passionate about the games as I am. But midway through the second quarter, she joins me and starts watching and reading in at least the same room. She saw enough to see that the team was playing, shall we say, like pure and total garbage. So at the half, she, and I can't stress this enough that it was all her, suggests that we do something to change their luck. I ask what she has in mind, and she says we should go have some halftime breakfast. I ask if she's serious.
Is there better breakfast than halftime breakfast?
Because halftime breakfast, that's even after lunch.
Yeah. Well, so what, would it be like lunner?
I don't know. That doesn't sound as glorious.
No, it sure doesn't. You can have breakfast any time of the day, though.
That's true. And as we find out here, I ask if she's serious, and she says, well, it can't hurt, can it? I say we only have about 12 minutes before the second half, and she says that's fine. Well, who am I to argue? And let's face it, if you cut out all the prep time it takes to prepare a normal breakfast, do you really need more than 5 or 6 minutes anyway?
So no, she's... no, 12 minutes is 11 and a half more minutes than I would need. I can tell you that much.
So she stepped up, not for me, not for her, but the good of the Seahawks and the entire flock, and I think we all owe her a big thank you for the effort, because, as we know, we came back from 14 points down to win by 6. Now, for a serious discussion, are we a good team? Are we the worst of the good teams? Are we the best of the bad teams? Why can't our pass defense stop anybody? We have made average to below average quarterbacks look absolutely amazing this season. Should we fire Ken Norton? Is it a scheme issue, personnel issue, or both? How much does the head coach bear responsibility? If he disagrees with the defensive coordinator and his game plan, can't he overrule him? Can't he make adjustments if the DC isn't? It just seems like week after week, other teams adjust to our defense and we keep doing the same thing and it doesn't work. Also, since Clinton Bonner won't do it, out! Chris Carson! Dude has developed a serious case of fumbleitis this season, and bonus out for him getting caught from behind on his 50-yard run. I know one running back that wouldn't have gotten caught from behind in the open like that. And he puts a little winky emoji in there. Thanks for the work that you and the other guy do each week. I know it's not easy and appreciate it. Keep up the good work. Go Hawks.
Am I now the other guy?
You're that other guy.
No, oh, wow.
I mean, unless he's referencing Clinton as that other guy, but he did name Clinton.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. I see how this is. That's fine, Michael Paul. It's all good. Yeah, I'm glad you're getting breakfast on the regular, and I'm happy for you. I'm also happy that we run Chris Carson more than Rashad Penny still. But, yeah, the fumble was problematic. And, you know, as far as the defense goes, I mean, we talked about it ad nauseum in the first half of the show. I don't know, man.
I mean, Pete Carroll does have the ability to step in and say, this is what we're doing. So I don't think, as far as the type of scheme that they're running, I don't think that Coach Carroll is opposed to that. And we saw that when Jamar Taylor was out there, I think he graded out even as the worst of the corner, or even the worst of all the defenders. So, you know, the one thing I feel like we keep hoping every week, like, oh, if Quandre Diggs gets out there, is that going to be what changes it? You know, with Tedrick Thompson going to IR and with Bradley McDougal and Marquise Blair, is that going to make a difference? And each week it ends up, it just doesn't seem to be making a difference.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, I'm still hopeful on the Diggs addition, and I'm willing to give it like about 2 to 3 weeks after he kind of gets mixed into things. There's kind of a chicken and the egg thing, right? Is it, you know, the defensive backs aren't holding up, or is it that the pass rush is terrible? You know, I mean, the pass rush looks a lot better if everything's covered up and they can get to the quarterback and have that little extra time. The defensive backs look a hell of a lot better when the pass rush has its hair on fire and is really giving the quarterback fits.
Yeah, and if the pass rush is giving the quarterback fits and he's just dumping it off to running backs and up against the linebackers, then it's making the linebackers look bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's got to be a better way to do it, I mean, at this point. But, yeah, I mean, there's guys that are getting paid millions of dollars to figure it out. And,
I don't think it's going to be us that comes up with the solution.
That's kind of where I'm getting, yeah.
Scott in Chicago emails in, says, well, I am glad to see the Seahawks won, even though my NFL Game Pass at this point only let me see the first drive and then jump to the last drive in OT, spoiling the game for me. I was just writing this in to warn other Seahawkers to be wary of purchasing the NFL Game Pass. I think it will be my last time with their Game Pass. Do better. Anyway, I always look forward to the episodes on both the Field Goals podcast and the Seahawkers podcast. So Brandon and Adam, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Well, thanks for that. But, you know, as far as the Game Pass goes, like, that couldn't be more frustrating, could it?
No. Gosh. Jumping all the way to the end? Especially if you... Because the Game Pass goes out of its way to say, you know, have the scores turned off, so that way if you're behind and nothing gets spoiled, they do a pretty good job of trying to keep it spoiler-free. And but that doesn't help when they jump to the end of the game and you see the Seahawks celebrating.
Yeah, that would bum me out big time. Yeah, do better.
It's not more. It's speaking of things that bum out big time. Sympathies to Annalisa with her cat passing this past week.
Yeah, did notice that, and that's always tough losing a pet, and you know, especially you know one that's as beloved as you know little kitty was, and just tough. But you know, she's got the right people around her, clearly. And she'll be fine in the end.
I had to put down our cat of 17 years this year. That's not fun.
Never is. Never is, man.
Well, with that sad note, I did want to pass on my sympathy to Annalisa because she's one of our favorite little flockers out there.
Hell yeah, man. For sure.
What do you say we get into some do better and better at life?
All right, man. I've been trying to flip flop between. I've got two do betters, and I'm having a hard time deciding which one. although one's a little more evergreen, I might save that one.
Okay.
So my do better this week is for the crazy chick on Bourbon Street. So we get to me and the girlfriend. We get to go down and spend you know one evening in the French Quarter, New Orleans, on this trip. And we get down there, we get checked into our hotel, and, you know, we walk around the French Quarter. And if you're anywhere like a block or two off of Bourbon Street, like everything is chill. The bars are cool. Everybody's great. Like it's a small town feel in a big city. I actually really enjoy it. Out of all the places in the South, like that's probably my favorite place. You know, it's really
I haven't
cool.
been there yet. So I'm interested to hear the review.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's a lot of fun. The architecture is great. You can walk around with a beer. That's amazing.
Oh, that's
I
nice.
Like the open container law.
Yeah.
Works for my deal.
I noticed that on Halloween here in town, even people were doing that.
Yeah. Well, in Kalispell, you can get away a little more than maybe you should. that's because my brother-in-law is a cop. So it's just how it works. But, but point being, like, usually a really cool town, but I always stay off of Bourbon Street because Bourbon Street sucks. It does. It's the Vegas of New Orleans.
Okay.
Like, it's just party dudes and just nonsense and, like, all that. Well, you know, the girlfriend hadn't been down there since she was 21, and she was only there with her mom for, like, a day. So she hadn't really gotten the full experience. Like, well, we should probably walk down Bourbon Street, you know, once.
Yeah.
Just so you can see it.
Okay. Right?
So towards the end of our evening, we decided to walk down Bourbon Street. We're walking down Bourbon Street. It's busy, and it's a party, and, you know, all the woo guys are out, you know, woo, and all that nonsense. And it's fine. And then these two dudes just start, like, getting into it, like, scrapping, like, right in front of us on the street. And they're kind of wrestling around, and I was like, oh, okay, like, well, these guys are fine. But then it starts to get serious, you know, like, and one of the guys grabs the other dude by the throat and starts choking him the
catfish
out. And like people start freaking, but everybody just stands to the side and just watches this guy start to like beat on the other dude.
Yeah. Well, get your phone out.
Like nobody's. Yeah. I was like, yeah, they take their phones out. Yes. I'm like, all right. nobody's going to say anything here? Like, really? Like, that's what we're doing? So after a minute or two, and it looks like this guy's going to, you know, come to a bad end right there on the street, the girlfriend's freaking out a little bit. And so I put down my beer and I walk over there and I'm like, you know, big voice, just like, we're done. Knock it off. And I actually get the attention of both dudes. They release each other and they're about to end the catfishing fight. Yeah. Right. The girlfriend loses her shit and starts freaking out and screaming at people. And she's wielding a tote bag with a long drawstring that I'm guessing had a bottle of half filled liquor in it.
Uh-huh.
And she's swinging it like a goddamn nunchuck. And she looks at me and I said, we're done. Knock it off, fellas. She goes, oh yeah. What are you going to do about it? And clocks me in the jaw with it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Draws blood. it didn't feel good. It didn't feel good.
Wow.
So at that point I was like, well, screw you. You're on your own now. Like, I was just trying to help, and I was actually getting your boy out of this.
Yeah.
And then at that point,
it was her guy that was getting beat up on?
Yes.
What?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, you know, so I'm kind of stunned for
Where was she
a
with her
second.
Bottle when the other, and going out, why was she not going after this other dude?
She was just screaming. And then when I came in, it was like, we're done. We're knocking this off. She decides to unload on my ass.
Well, why didn't she nunchuck bottle the other dude earlier?
I have no idea. So she nunchucks me with a bottle of booze in the jaw. It, like I said, draws blood. Like, it doesn't feel great. And at that point, I'm like, all right, you're on your own. I tried to help. And her dude starts to stumble over to the sidewalk. And the other guy comes running up, sucker punches him in the head. He hits the deck, knocks his head on the concrete, and
catfish
spazzes out there. Fortunately, there happens to be a nurse standing right there. And she helps him get back to, you know, some semblance of not being brain dead. But for, you know, the audacity to come in and try to keep her boyfriend from getting freaking beat up for, no reason. Stupid crazy chick on Bourbon Street clocks me in the head with a bottle of who knows what. Do better.
Wow.
Yeah. That was my last night. That's what happened last night.
Now you've had the Bourbon Street experience, both you and the lady friend, and now that can be avoided in the future.
Yeah, I've avoided every time I'm down there. We just happen to do it once.
Oh, well, my do better this week is I'm thinking that there's a crazy person on the NFL Network graphics team. It's not nearly as violent, but I saw NFL Network on Instagram posted a graphic with all of the MVP candidates on it. And I can't help but wonder if somebody's missing from this graphic, though, because I see front and center down at the bottom is Patrick Mahomes, and he's flanked by Lamar Jackson and Matt Stafford on the right side. On the left side, you got Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott. Okay. So you move up the graphic a little bit. Oh, they throw some running backs in here. You got Dalvin Cook and Ed McCaffrey kind of in the middle. And then they put in a receiver up on the top. Michael Thomas makes sense. He's having a solid year. And then you got Aaron Rodgers up top in the middle, you know, a former MVP. And then for whatever reason, they throw in Kirk Cousins because they didn't have enough Vikings. And that's it. That's the MVP graphic. I feel like somebody's missing, though.
Yeah, you think? Maybe? One guy?
One guy. They leave off Russell Wilson. And the worst thing is, I don't know if it's worse, but they did notice the error. And so they scooch over the Patrick Mahomes graphic to the right. They move over Deshaun Watson to the left a little bit. And they do end up putting Russell Wilson in the front when they decide to remake this. But for an NFL Network graphics designer to go through this entire process, to look at the graphic once you're done and go, yeah, I think I got everybody. In fact, I even ended up with two Vikings players on here. So for the NFL Network graphics designer, who's likely a Vikings fan, clearly not a Seahawks fan, do better.
Yeah, man. Jeez, the leader in the MVP race, and you neglect to put him on there. I guess it's probably because he's in South Alaska.
Somebody remarked that maybe he was just so short and somebody covered him up. He was in the background.
Boo. Bad joke.
Yeah.
All right. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week, Brandon. I think I finally found the one useful thing that Twitter is on this universe for.
Oh.
Yes. There is a website called The Score.
Uh-huh.
And they analyze some of the geotagged Twitter data regarding comments and stuff made about NBA teams. And they were able to ascertain the most hated team in all of the United States of America. You know which team that was, Brandon?
Golden State?
Nope. They actually got it right, America. America and The Score got it right. It's the Los Angeles Lakers.
That was my next guess.
The way they buy titles, and they're basically the Yankees of the NBA. They're a disgusting franchise with a disgusting fan base, and our good buddy Jared's a fan of them. That makes it even worse. I'm so sick and tired of the Lakers. I hate them with the passion of a thousand burning suns. So to The Score, to America, better at life than Skip Bayless, and screw the Lakers.
Yeah, you had to find a way to get your shot in on the Lakers. I understand.
As many times as possible.
Well, hey, with Veterans Day coming up on Monday, my Better at Life goes to the veterans out there.
Well, now you made me look bad. That's a really good Better at Life.
I was going to go with the Antonio Brown translator on Twitter. When you mentioned some good things on Twitter, I thought you might be stealing my thoughts here.
Oh, no, I didn't know that there was an Antonio Brown translator. I didn't think the technology was ever going to be possible to translate that level of crazy. I mean, that's the type of crazy that swings bottles in a bag at people's heads.
So here's his initial tweet. It says, somebody asked him, what's the deal with you and Derek Carr? Everything cool? Or you left on bad terms? And Antonio Brown says, he cool, great person, truly just wish he had more say so in regards of things, but he didn't want AB. It's a lot that comes with it. And then he throws in an exclamation point randomly. I even bought him a Rolex. Wonder, does he know what time it is? Probably never put it on. Tell him, send it to Brady. So kind of a rambling, no punctuation type tweet. Except
like
for the
some do on Twitter. Yes.
Yeah. And so here comes the Antonio Brown translator. Thank goodness. So in response to the question, if he's good with Derek Carr, honestly, he's a great person, but I wish he had more pull within the organization. He didn't want Antonio on his team. So it is what it is. I even bought him a nice Rolex watch, but he probably never even checks to see what time it is. He might as well send it to Tom Brady.
That's pretty well done.
It's really well done. He did so well that he got himself blocked by Antonio Brown, so he couldn't quote tweet the Antonio Brown tweets. So now he has to screenshot them and decode them that way. But Antonio Brown had such a he got so hurt by it that he had to block this dude.
What a joke show.
So an honorary Better at Life for the Antonio Brown translator, but for the veterans on Veterans Day, all of you, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Hell yeah, man. Well, and being a former Navy yourself, like, I know it's near and dear to your heart, and definitely much more appropriate that comes from you than me, a coward who never did any of that. So,
but hey, and a. And just a reminder for the veterans, you know, make sure that you're taking advantage of the benefits, because there's a lot of places where you get free food on Veterans Day.
Hell yeah, man.
I mean,
eat that up.
You got to like Applebee's usually hit that at dinner time or lunchtime, and then, you know, find another place in town that that does it for I can usually eat for free on one day out of the year. And so you got to track down and know where that's at.
Yeah, there you go. See, pro tip.
Pro tip by me. For all the veterans. And as we get on out of here, a big thanks to our $12 and above flockers who are helping make this show possible.
Keith Kedover, a.k.a. Floctimus Prime, University of Cybertron, Little Flockers, roll out.
DCH from Sparks, Nevada, the University of Montana Grizzlies.
Annalisa Mickelson, a.k.a. Mrs. Doug Baldwin, New York, New York, undergrad, University of North Carolina, Greensboro, graduate school, Brooklyn College.
Eric Trench, rooting for the Seahawks out of Renton, Washington, graduated from Eastern Washington University.
Gary Blum from Chappaqua, New York, and the University of Pennsylvania, your 2016 Pick'em League champion.
Ron Pepper, UNLV Runnin' Rebels, San Francisco, California.
Tickety-boo! This here is Hong Kong Hawk, it is! from Hertfordshire Meadows, just north of Chelsea, yeah?
Kevin Stengem, Keene, Texas.
Ella Esparza, Woodway, Texas. Yale University and Sam Houston State, eat 'em up, cats.
Lisa in Seattle.
Vincent Parker, Emily Carr, University of Art Design, RN Collective.
Samuel Gelber, NoHo, California.
David Van Cleve, Camas, Washington, home of the papermakers.
Leo Jesse, Luleå, Sweden, from Luleå Eskimos and Van Comoran Front.
Paul from San Diego.
This is Bryce Shaw from Sugarland, Texas. I'm 11 years old and spent my allowance to join the Ring of Honor. Do better and go Hawks.
Jameson Holman from Murray, Utah, representing Mississippi State University. Hail State and go Hawks.
Hey Seahawkers, my name is Garen Taylor. I live in one of the most beautiful places in the world, North Idaho. Hashtag on the rose. Go Hawks.
And continuing on down the list, we mentioned him earlier, executive producer Dustin Mock, Ross in Eureka, California, Christina in Manassas, Virginia, Sven in Berlin, Deutschland, James in Linwood, Roe in Federal Way, Young in Anchorage, Becca in Manhattan Beach, California, Tim in Austin, John Paul in Palmer, Alaska, Kathy in Eureka, California, Joshua in London, Jared in Missoula, Montana, Brandon in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Christian in Bergen, Norway, Jonathan in Ridgefield, Glenn in Sanford, Florida, Paul in Minneapolis, Seth in Tacoma, John in New York, Pepper in Greenville, South Carolina, Don in the Pacific Northwest, Mitchell in Roseville, California, Keegan in Colorado Springs, John in Pierce, Nebraska, Owen in Ashburn, Ireland, Jeffrey in Kansas City, Kari in Rochester, Jeff in Waddell, Arizona, Ryan in Berlin, Connecticut, Eric in Seattle, Tracy in Kaneohe, Hawaii, Connie in Gothenburg, Sweden, Taylor in South Cle Elum, Brian in Sugarland, Texas, Lisa in Kelowna, BC, Dean in the Greater Hawkdom, Marvin in Riverdale, Utah, Ryan in the Greater Hawkdom, JC in Billericay, UK, Scott in Bakersfield, California, Eric in Clovis, California, Chris in Spokane, Kevin in Sammamish, Bryson in Eltopia, Shannon in Florida, John in the Greater Hawkdom, Shoko in New York, Greg in Seattle, Ryan in Chatham, UK, Ben in Wrexham, UK, Kenneth in Hutto, Texas, DK in Ferndale, Paul in Boston, Jeremy in the Bronx, Mario in Pullman, Kyler in Plainfield, Illinois, Jeremy in Moses Lake, Benjamin in Woodenville, Cora in Ditters, Deutschland, Jeff in Monroe, and Warren in Dundee, Oregon.
They're amazing. We appreciate you all more than you know. And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Ian and Sweet, can I help you?
Hi, could I have room 201, please?
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
Ian and Suites.
Hi, it's me again. Room 201.
You are being transferred to the operator.
Ian and Suites, may I help you?
Hi, it keeps telling me that I'm being transferred to the operator.
I don't think they're in their room. I can try it one more time.
Okay. I was just on the phone with them and I got cut off, so.
Oh, okay.
You are being transferred to the operator.
And in Suites.
All right, hits me again.
Okay.
You are being transferred to the operator.
And in Suites, may I help you?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
I don't think they're in their room, but I can try it one more time.
I'll wait till I get a text from him, and then I'll call back in.
Okay.
Okay.